Henry, when you first became a self-managing landlord, would you say that you knew what you were doing?
Yes, Dave, I absolutely did not know what I was doing. I was terrible at it.
Okay, because I was about to call BS here if you said you did.
I was terrible. I was just so excited that somebody actually wanted to pay me rent, that I would take their money however they would give it to me, no matter what that meant for me down the road.
All right. Well, I'm glad I'm not alone. And we're going to dig into this topic a lot on the show today. We're going to cover everything that you need to know as a self-managing landlord. Hey, investors, and welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. I'm your host, Dave Meyer, and with me today is Henry Washington.
Today, we're going to be talking to Amelia McGee and Grace Gudenkoff. They are two young investors who both scaled to 20 units apiece with no systems or processes in their real estate business. And today, we're going to learn from their mistakes and give all of our investors a toolkit to become excellent self-managers.
I think this is going to be a really cool episode because Grace and Amelia make a compelling case, and I personally agree with this, that not for everyone, but most people should consider being a self-managing landlord because you learn so much that you can apply over the rest of your investing career. And one of the cool things about these two guests is they've actually written an entire book on the topic of being a self-managing landlord. It is called The Self-Managing Landlord. It's published by Bigger Pockets. And if you want to get it, you should check it out at biggerpockets.com/managing book. That's where you can get the book itself, plus all the bonuses that they'll be giving away. With that, let's get into it and invite Amelia and Grace onto the show. Amelia and Grace, welcome to the Bigger Pockets podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. We're super excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Amelia, let's start with you. You believe that starting off as a self-managing landlord makes you a better investor over the lifetime of your investing career. Why do you recommend this approach over hiring a property manager?
Yeah, so we're both of the maybe controversial opinion that when you buy probably one of the biggest assets of your life, you shouldn't look to immediately hire out something that could absolutely make or break your business. So when you're a self-managing landlord, you have way more control over who you place in your property, which is huge. You save money so that you can in turn scale. We also think that it's a really marketable skill that you can use in future partnerships. And we think that if you eventually hire out a property manager, you're still going to have to train the property manager or know what goes on behind the scenes. So it's really good to have that boots on the ground experience right when you get started.
And Grace, do you share the same opinion or do you come at this question the same way?
Absolutely. Especially if you're somebody who wants to reach financial freedom quickly or scale quickly, you really need to work every dollar in your business. And when you're hiring out immediately at 10% of your rent, that could be a third, a quarter, half of your actual cash flow at the end of the day after reserves and your pity and all of that. So when I know I can do it better and put in systems and processes, I don't know why I would ever look to hire it out. And I think that that works for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely something to be said for needing to understand how to manage a property before you hire someone to manage a property, because how do you know what you're looking for, right? And the margins are slim sometimes in rental properties in general. But when you go ahead and you hire someone to take on 10% and you don't quite know what it is they're supposed to be doing, then you can really paint yourself into a corner pretty early. So I think that that's definitely a good idea so that people understand what they're doing. But you mentioned, Grace, that once you figured out you need to have the systems in place, right? So paint a picture for us. What moment did you realize, oh no, I don't have the systems in place to scale as a self-managing landlord?
Yeah, I think a lot of landlords are like, if you're paying me, I'll chase you down for it as long as I get it. And that's not a good systemized way to handle your rental properties. For me, I scaled to 15 to 20 units in about 2 years, Amelia as well. So I just ran around doing everything like a chicken with my head cut off. And there was one particular instance where I realized, oh my gosh, I'm relying on emotional decisions, not actual procedures or systems. And it was February in the middle of Iowa. I had a turnover. If you know anything about Iowa, you know, nobody wants to move in February. And I let myself forego all of my tenant screening just to get somebody in because I was emotional about it, right? I wasn't looking at my workflow or these are the exact requirements I have. I was making it up as I went along and I got burned very quickly. She stopped paying in about 3 to 4 months. That's the only tenant I ever had to evict. And you know, right then and there, I wrote out my requirements and they are on one piece of paper and they're the same for every rental moving forward. And I don't ever make an emotional decision anymore.
What about you, Amelia? Do you have a similar moment when you realized, oh crap, I need to do this in a more systematized way?
Absolutely. I would say paying rent any which way is a trap that most investors fall into. I was accepting rent via Venmo, the property management software I was using, checks, people depositing at the bank. And it was so hard to actually keep track. And when I eventually hired it out to a bookkeeper, they also hated me for it. And then when I also hired a property manager, they were like, what the heck is going on here? I can't tell you if someone is late. I can't tell you this, that, or the other because you're accepting rent in too many ways. So that was a huge turning point for me just to make it easier for others in my business as well.
I'm so embarrassed to admit how many times I just like lost checks when I first started being a landlord and had to like go back to my tenants with my tail between my legs and be like, can you pay me again? Because I'm a super disorganized person and can't keep my together.
Yeah. And that's a great way to present it to the tenant too, is as a benefit for them. So you can say, I need to accept rent in this property management software because then I can provide a receipt. Then I'm not chasing you down even though you've already paid. So always present something like this as a benefit to the tenant.
So you've made clear, and I think we all agree, that having a system for rent collection is obviously important. But Grace, what are some of the other processes or tasks that a property manager needs to do regularly that necessitate a system?
Absolutely. We're huge proponents of having a property management software, even if you have one rental. And there's a few key reasons why. As Amelia talked about, you want to collect rent the same place, the same time every month to keep it easy. You also want the same with maintenance requests. If you don't have your tenants trained to put everything in the system that you use, for example, they call, they text, they email, then you can't keep track of everything. You can't serve your tenants quickly and you can't make sure that you're getting things done in time and being able to reference those requests moving forward. For example, if something keeps breaking, you know you need to replace it, not fix it for the 10th time. And I had an instance once where Amelia and I both have now internal property managers, so not a company, somebody who's on our payroll. And a great example of why you need to have a property management system is I had a maintenance request come in outside of the system. Tenant Cloud is what I use. Well, my property manager went out of town and I had to step in and handle it. But they were texting. I can't see those texts. I have no idea what's been said. It ended up being an emergency HVAC repair the day after Christmas. That's very, very expensive. So I've got emergency repair guys knocking at her door 8 a.m. on a Saturday in the middle of a blizzard. She's at work. She's going to be at work for the next 8 hours. But I didn't know that because her phone number was outdated in Tenant Cloud because she wasn't trained to use that system. So how the heck is somebody else supposed to step in and make sure that that gets done? And then the last thing is late fees. We always say, make the management software the bad guy. Make the management software issue the late fees. So it's like, hey, sorry, it comes out automatically. I'm not texting you saying, hey, by the way, you actually need to pay me another $30.
Nice. That seems like a good system. And yeah, I do like having sort of the automation and it just sort of smooths the whole process. Okay. So Grace and Amelia have laid out a clear case for what can go wrong if you aren't managing your own rental portfolio well. But are there ways you can learn these lessons without getting burned first? And what systems do Grace and Amelia recommend to make your life easier? We'll get into all of that right after the break.
What if you could buy new construction homes up to $20,000 below market value? That's right, $20,000 in instant equity. What if you could use that same $20,000 to cover your down payment or score a lower mortgage rate? Talk about being spoiled for choices. Right now, Rent-A Retirement is offering investors their choice of incentives when they invest in a new turnkey property. Your options? Up to $20,000 below retail pricing on new construction homes, aka instant equity, or a 5% down payment credit. That means less cash out of your pocket. Tired of high rates? Use that $20,000 to lower your interest rate to as low as 3.99% and score free property management for a year. All right, well, now they're just getting crazy over there. Rental retirement's final option? No money down investor loans. Take your choice of instant equity, low or no money down, or a rate as low as 3.99%. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's rent, T-O, retirement.com. Or text REI to 33777. REI 33777 to take advantage of these limited time incentives. Are you about to sell a property? Wait like 60 seconds because this could save you thousands. Our friends at 1031 Pros have saved their clients more than $500 million with a B in taxes with 1031 tax deferred exchanges. With the 1031 exchange, you can say goodbye to the huge capital gains taxes when selling and roll your property's profit into another investment that could make you even more. Whether you're an individual investor, part of a larger group, or a title or real estate agent, 1031 Pros is ready to help. Trust me, I've done 1031 exchanges on multiple properties before, and it has saved me tens of thousands in taxes, if not more. With over 30 years of experience, 1031 Pros has handled over 20,000 audit-free exchanges, and they specialize in all types of exchanges, delayed, simultaneous, reverse, and improvement exchanges in all 50 states. And right now, Bigger Pockets listeners can get $250 off any exchange by visiting my1031pros.com/BP. That's my1031pros.com/BP to get $250 off today. Oh, and make sure to mention Bigger Pockets when you call. They take care of our people over there.
Welcome back to the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast. We're here with Grace and Amelia, and they are schooling us on how to manage your rental portfolio like a pro. If you're finding this conversation valuable, go ahead and push that follow button so you can never miss an episode. Let's jump back in.
I'm curious, though, because you've both mentioned these new systems and sort of being burned before adopting a new system. And it seems to me that every investor sort of follows this pattern where you're like, I'm going to do the cheap thing, or I'm going to do the lazy thing. And then it always happens. You get burned, you get what you pay for, and you learn your lesson. And then you start to adopt the systems. But Amelia, are there ways that people can be a little bit more proactive about it and not wait until something bad happens and just start picking up best practices, maybe a little bit earlier in their investing career than probably the four of us did?
Yeah, we actually think our biggest lessons learned and our best systems and processes come right after we've gotten burned. But if there's one thing that we're big proponents of, it's to start your systems and processes with your very first property. And this can be as simple as writing down what you're doing. So when you're onboarding a tenant, walk through the steps of how you're doing that. Where are you listing it? What is the listing description? This is important because you don't want to have to rewrite that listing description every time the unit comes up for rent, which is a mistake I've definitely made. And this has started to save me so much time. Write down your requirements for rent. How are they applying? What does the walkthrough process look like? Every little step of the way, it can be as simple as just a Google Doc, but start writing down what you're doing. Even if it seems like I'm going to remember this, I think we're all guilty of that. I have a lot of things in my head that I know that I can remember. But once you've scaled to even five different properties, it becomes a lot harder to remember what you need to get done for every property. If you have a checklist, it's so much simpler.
Yeah, it almost sounds like you are from day one creating like a standard operating procedure. And I think that, A, that's a wonderful idea. I wish I had done it. But B, I think one of the things I want to clarify for people too is I don't think I hear you saying on day one, go out and buy the most expensive, sophisticated piece of property management software there is out there because it's going to make your life easier. You're just simply saying document a process and then follow it repeatedly. And then as you grow in scale, maybe you can bring in a more sophisticated piece of software. But a process doesn't always mean an expensive tool to track it. It can literally mean a spreadsheet or a Word doc, but something that you reference, repeat, and keep updated. Because I promise you, you're still going to make mistakes, right? I still make mistakes today. So that document needs to live and breathe. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. Your SOP should be living, breathing documents that are always updated. I tell my team within real estate and our team in Wire all the time, hey, it might say to do it this way right now, but in 4 days, it might change. And I'll update the document because I'm all about learning quickly and changing and adapting. But as you have to have that one source of truth. And that's where a lot of investors get tripped up. They have a source of truth in their texts, in their emails, written down on paper, whatever they've said verbally to their tenant. A standard operating procedure is a way to have one answer. This is how we do it. This is the answer. And like you said, it doesn't have to be complicated. It could be some bullet points in a Google sheet.
I really like that because it, at least in my experience managing people at BiggerPockets, not in my real estate business, I think it's very difficult to try and standardize how people are organized. Like some people want to use Trello, like really complicated software. Some people just write it down in a book. I personally use Evernote for everything in my life, you know, and it's difficult to say like, there's just this one way that you can be organized. But it sounds like, Grace, what you're saying is like, figure out what works for you and certainly try and use best practices and adopt them. But there doesn't need to be this super complex system and everyone can sort of figure out what resonates best with them.
Absolutely. There's a million ways to do every single process we're talking about, whether it's renting, maintenance requests, whatever. The idea we're trying to tell you is that think about it like a business, make sure there's a source of truth, and know that you can execute that however you want, but do what makes sense for you so you actually use it and stick to it. Otherwise, it's all going to crumble and you might write out this huge long operating procedure and never follow it. That's useless.
So let's take kind of what you've talked about and put it into practice, right? So let's say an investor, they just closed on their first rental property. They've been hounding BiggerPockets for months now, and they've been doing all the research and they finally did it. They pulled the trigger. They closed on their first rental property. What should be their first or some of their first steps to get themselves organized?
One of the first things you should do as a first-time landlord, and this is something Amelia and I did very, very wrong, is start quick guides. These are little keys to the different important information in your business. So it might be utility numbers. It might be banking account numbers. It might just be addresses. But as I was talking about the different sources of truth earlier, that's how we started. So whenever it was time to go find a utility number, I'd be scrolling through my email or looking through my text messages, trying to find whatever it is I was looking for. Whereas if you just make a quick guide, and this could be even for tenant communication or onboarding communication, you know that is the source of truth and everything gets organized. And it's crazy how a little bit of organization is really the foundation for an efficient business that gets things done the right way the first time.
I would add to that, even before you buy a property, while you're going through the like escrow process, you should be documenting everything that you're doing. Reaching out to insurance agents. Grace and I are both guilty of the day before our closing.
So bad about that.
Yeah, we love to forget it.
Oh my gosh, I still do it to this day. I'm like, oh man, it's even on my list. I forget to get an insurance quote and I'm like, what the heck am I doing? So put that on your list. Put all of your contacts that you're going to use for that specific property in your quick guide. Don't forget to change out utilities into your name. Also super guilty of that. So just before you even close on the property, be documenting what you're doing.
You've both in our conversation so far referred to your properties as a business. And I'm curious if you think one of the barriers here to setting things up is that people, particularly when they start out, don't see a single rental property or, you know, a couple of properties as a business and are just sort of treating it sort of as the side hustle or thing that they do on the side. And that sort of prevents the professionalization that you both are recommending here.
Yeah, we're both extremely guilty of this as well. We've done a lot of things wrong, which is why we're so happy to be sharing because these are...
This is turning into a confessional.
This is a tell-all.
There are such common traps that lots of investors fall into. So neither one of us started calling our rental portfolio a business until we were probably over 20 doors apiece. But starting with your first property, it is a business. Even if it's a side hustle, you can have a part-time job and that's still a business. So That also helps you manage your tenants. If you have a business email, they're going to take you more seriously. If you say, this is how my business does things, these are our procedures, they don't know. They have no idea that you own one property. So even with one property, this should be a business to you.
I think that's something that a lot of landlords get wrong, is they think that self-managing is a job, and it can be if you make it a job. When you call it a business, it forces you to think about it of, oh, I own this business. I'm the CEO. Do I need to be cleaning my properties? Do I need to be doing the sit and think where I reinvent the wheel every time I go to list that rental property? Or can I consider myself a business owner and then put myself in the shoes of how do I work on my business, not in it, and not reinvent the wheel and work on finding deals and things that are money-making rather than the things that just take a lot of time and don't make you any money. So it seems silly, and I always felt silly saying my business for a long time, but it really is a mindset shift that helps pave the way for a lot of different things that you need to do within your business to make it easier so you can have more profit, more time with less input.
You know, that's a great distinction. And I don't know that I've ever thought about it like that before. But you hear it all the time. People are like, oh, you're a landlord. You're just giving yourself another job. No, absolutely not. I own a business, right? And there are jobs to do within my business. And I can choose to do those jobs. I can hire someone to do those jobs, or I can bring in a piece of software that helps me do those jobs, right? But when you picture it as a business and not a job, it forces you to think more like an owner and not an employee, which is what we all need to do with our businesses. But with that, like I said, you can bring in technology to do some of these jobs. And for me, like I said, early on, I realized I needed to bring in some piece of technology to help me, but it was overwhelming. And I have a technical background. Like, I did software development, like, as my career. So if it's intimidating to me, it's got to be intimidating to somebody who doesn't have that background. So what types of technology do people need to be looking for and implementing early on in their business?
Well, the first one is your property management software. If you haven't already picked up on that, Grace and I are huge proponents of a strong property management software. We both use Tenant Cloud, but there's lots of softwares out there, and you need to do your own research and decide what's best for you. But you should have a software that at least does online lease signing, collects rent, has a really robust maintenance system, and a strong tenant messaging system. So those are our minimum requirements for property management software. The second that I would recommend for new investors starting out that want to have some sort of a tech stack is a bookkeeping software. This is huge. Grace and I didn't have one to get started. I think we were both using Excel spreadsheets or maybe Stessa.
Or nothing.
Grace was using nothing. She can tell that story, but this is huge. You have to be able to show how much you spent every year, document what you're even spending money on so that you can know if you're even running a profitable business. And then the third is a project management software, which we can talk more about. But just to give you the top three, those are what I would say.
Given that you've both scaled to the point where you were self-managing, you did all the things yourself, then you've started to bring some things in-house. Like, what is the difference between what you're doing and someone who's not self-managing at all? Like, where do you see the distinction of what self-management is?
Yeah, the people who continue to treat management as a job are going to crash and burn, not be able to be proactive. Earlier, we talked about how do you increase your profitability with the same rental portfolio rather than always focusing on acquiring. And if you have the systems and processes to do that, to review your finances, to be proactive with your turnovers and who you're leasing to, you're going to have such a more streamlined and hands-off business than if you are stuck in the job of self-management.
The last straw for me before hiring a bookkeeper was I set up my own property management software, and I accidentally put one unit into the wrong bank account, into the other bank account. And like at the end of the year, I was like, this property is killing it. I am doing amazing. And then this other, I was like, wow, this deal really sucks. And it took me like way longer than I care to admit to realize that I was just depositing two sets of rent checks into the wrong property. It definitely took a lot of time and a lot of money to fix that up. And now I have a professional bookkeeper who does all this stuff for me.
All right. At this point, you all know maybe a little too much about Dave's and my early mistakes. but you also know what to do to avoid them. After this break, we'll get into some of the best ways that you can both find and manage tenants. And we'll talk about how these strategies pay off in terms of your time. And you'll also learn at what point do you need to think about starting to delegate some of this work as you scale. So stay with us.
Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling that I locked my back door. How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to SimpliSafe Home Security. I'm about to go on a 3-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from SimpliSafe, I don't need to worry. SimpliSafe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. SimpliSafe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, SimpliSafe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with SimpliSafe's 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. Want to dive deep into commercial real estate, entrepreneurship, leadership, and the economy? Tune into the Walker Webcast, hosted by the CEO of Walker & Dunlop, one of the largest commercial real estate finance and advisory services firms in the nation. As an unparalleled leader in commercial real estate, CEO Willie Walker frequently appears as an expert on major platforms like CNBC and the New York Times. He's even been on the Bigger Pockets podcast network, too. On the Walker Webcast, you'll hear from guests like A-Rod, renowned economist Dr. Peter Linneman, and experts from Walker & Dunlop's capital markets, research, and investment sales groups. So fire up the Walker Webcast on your favorite podcast app or join live on Wednesdays to see Willie interact with his guests. Plus, you can always catch the replay on demand afterward. Stay ahead of the curve with insights for life from the Walker Webcast. Learn more and subscribe to the Walker Webcast at walkerdunlop.com/pockets. And be sure to follow Walker & Dunlop on all your favorite social media channels too. That's walkerdunlop.com/pockets. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers a targeted 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of net profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, are first in line to get paid. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of a physical asset mitigate downside risk. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by directing your funds from Wall Street to Main Street and supporting local economies. The investment is reserved for accredited investors. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. pinefinancialgroup.com/BP.
Welcome back, investors. We are here with Grace and Amelia, swapping some of our most embarrassing early landlord stories to hopefully spare you the same costs. Let's pick up where we left off.
I want to move to something that I think really what a lot of people want to hear about from you guys, and that is tenant selection, right? So when it comes to finding tenants and managing tenants, what is it that you guys do or recommend or has worked for your business? Because that is where everybody feels like they get kicked in the teeth sometimes.
Yes, this is absolutely the biggest part of your business, in our opinion, is finding the right tenant, because they will make or break your property. They will make or break you as a landlord emotionally. No, I'm just kidding. But we are huge proponents of choosing the right tenant, waiting until you have a good applicant to move forward with them. So I'll take you through our tenant onboarding process. So obviously the first thing is listing it. We pretty much solely list on Facebook Marketplace. In the markets that we're in, that is where most of the tenants are hanging out. But we all know that there's tons of, is this still available messages that come through. I know. It's like the bane of my existence as a landlord. So right off the bat, we have saved in our Notes app or Google Drive an automated message that gets sent back to these possible applicants. It says, hi, the property is still available until it's no longer listed. If you're interested in the property, here's our free pre-application, and it sends them to a Google document. So this is huge because we want to make sure we're pre-screening tenants before we're even moving forward or wasting any more time with them. Are they even qualified? So that's going to collect their name, their income, and obviously check your, you know, the fair housing laws in your state to make sure you can collect this information. But just basic information, previous landlord's name with their contact information and the reason why they're moving. So just a couple basic things. From there, from the pre-screening application, we go through. If you're qualified, we set up usually an open house or one or two dates that they can go on to our Calendly schedule and book a time to view the property. After they've viewed the property, we have them submit a formal application that checks their background, credit score, and eviction history. And while that process is going on, we're also doing their employment verification and pay stub verification and previous landlord checks. Now, this is huge. And pro tip, just because someone writes down their landlord's name is John Smith, that doesn't always mean their landlord's name is John Smith. So do a little extra research. If you can look up the owner of the address that they say they're in, verify that it matches up with that person. When you call the landlord, we like to use a little trick that says, do you have any rental properties available? Instead of immediately going into, hey, I'm calling about Sam Jones. Is Sam Jones your current tenant? Well, if it's that person's friend, they're going to know that they need to lie for Sam Jones. So if you just say, hey, do you have any rentals available? If they're actually a landlord, they're not going to be super confused by that question. So landlord reference checks are huge because you want to make sure that they treated their last landlord kindly, make sure they have employment history, and credit check comes back. So those are the basics of screening, and we don't skimp on these processes anymore because we have been burned too many times by placing the wrong tenant.
And I just want to add in that if you're busy running around, barely keeping your head above water, you're going to realize your tenant or your property needs to be rented a few days before it needs to be rented, because that's what I used to do. If you can get proactive, and that's what working on your business is getting proactive, you have a checklist that says, okay, the day my tenant gets notice, I start my pre-leasing. I start the listing. So now I know tenants are going to be looking when they're 1 or 2 months out, not 3 days. And you can be more proactive, get better quality tenants, a bigger tenant pool, and place somebody who's going to be higher quality in your house, stay longer, and pay more rent with less turnover, which are all good things for you and your business.
Now, I want to move on and sort of talk about sort of how you both manage your time here, because you're both trying to scale. You're both managing your own portfolios, but how do you decide what parts of property management are worth it to you? Because there's so many different things. You can do everything yourself. You can get software. You can get hire out people internally. Amelia, how do you think on the return on time, and what is the, like, how do you decide what's worth it to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's so many components that go into owning rental properties. And the way that Grace and I look at it is in terms of money-making activities versus activities that we can hire out that aren't worth our time. So money-making activities for us is acquisition, reviewing financials every month, making projections and determining which properties are performing well and which aren't, determining which properties maybe need some deferred maintenance to make them hold more value or appreciate. And non-money-making activities for us at this point are those maintenance requests that come in at midnight that need to be taken care of. Those can easily be outsourced. We have processes written down for our property managers at this point where they can do those tasks. Little things like scheduling with handymen or anything like that that doesn't directly bring in more money for the business or help us with projections in the future has been hired out at this point.
So then, Amelia, that's interesting you say that, because would you consider that approach still being a self-managing landlord?
I personally do consider myself still a self-managing landlord, even though I have an internal property manager. She's only working for me. I have 41 doors at this point. She just self-manages for my portfolio. But I am still heavily involved in the operations of my rental portfolio. So I'm not doing the day-to-day communication with tenants, looking to make sure everyone's paid their rent, serving notices if that needs to happen. I'm looking at big picture. I'm the CEO of my business. I'm making sure that the rental portfolio is operating as it should.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I actually like to divide my management of any particular deal into two different categories. One, I would say, is operational management, which is sort of like the day-to-day stuff. So, you know, if you're renting a property out, it's all the stuff we're talking about, working with tenants. If it's short-term rental, it's managing guests. But there's this whole other side of managing a rental property, which I would personally call asset management, which is like, what are you doing with the physical asset to maximize its value? And that is stuff like, you know, are you going to do a BRRRR? Are you going to do a rehab? What's the scope of that rehab? Are you going to, you know, reposition the property? Are you going to subdivide it? Whatever comes up in a particular property. And to me, that part, I've never figured out a way to outsource. Like, you can outsource sort of like the day-to-day stuff, but asset management and sort of like being the last line of defense and the person who's like really ultimately responsible for the success of any individual deal, like, personally, I don't know if you can outsource that. Henry, are you sort of the same way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that falls into exactly what Amelia and Grace defined as money-making activities, because I think this is I think this is a part of management that people don't do enough. Even experienced operators don't do that enough. And I've been guilty of this, because we get so focused on acquisition in order to scale that we forget that we've got scale in our current portfolio if we monetize the properties to their fullest potential. And I think that's something only it's really only something you or some sort of like COO that you hire would be able to do. Somebody who specialized in understanding your portfolio, the intricacies of your portfolio, and then specialized in the industry. But this is the like far less talked about part of growing and scaling a real estate business that I think needs to be more on the forefront.
And if you don't refer to it as a business, you are only looking at that little sliver of property management. It doesn't even occur to you that there's an overarching manager, the asset management, what we're all talking about. And so you never think about it, you never do it. And one of those proactive things that came to my mind when you were talking, Henry, is my internal PM handles all the leasing and turnovers. But as the asset manager, a question I might bring to him is, hey, how do we eliminate winter turnovers? And I focus on the bigger picture. Okay, we only offer 6-month leases. If it's, you know, if they start the lease after October, it has to be 6 months. So things like that, that are the bigger picture, preventing turnover, which makes me money, that I'm talking about as the asset manager, but I'm not going doing the nitty gritty. I don't at this point even know my tenant's name. I might look them over, but I don't talk to them on a day-to-day. He does that.
Got it. So it sounds like both of you sort of started as, sell, you know, doing 100% of the management, everything from deal, you know, picking up the phones, you know, signing the leases yourself. Amelia, at what point did you decide that you needed to hire someone internally?
That's Such a great question. So I was at 36 doors before I hired someone internally, and I have a mixture of long-term, mid-term, and short-term. So there's a lot of moving parts. And one thing that held me back from ever hiring someone out was the fact that I wasn't even organized enough myself yet at that point that I felt I could train someone else on it. But to go back to your question, what was the turning point? It was when I really started to dig into my books and realize that I was losing money because I wasn't able to focus on the asset management. And the $500 a month that I pay my property manager, I save just by being a better business owner. So I'm very money motivated, and that was the turning point in my business.
I think when people ask this question, they want to know, like, you know, when's that point? Is it 10 doors? Is it 20 doors? Is it 30 doors? When can I truly afford to hire somebody? But more importantly, like, how did you feel? And this can go for both of you. How did you feel when you hired somebody? Did you feel like, oh my gosh, yes, I needed to do that? Because that's what I felt when I hired somebody. And that let me know that I should have done it a lot sooner.
Yes, 1000%. It was such a huge relief for me. And I said, I have to sign out of this. I will no longer be looking at this software. Sarah, my property manager, it's on you now. If you need me, I'm here, but I can't be in here anymore. It's too emotional for me.
I just want to add, for me, I'm very logical and numbers driven. And while, yes, emotionally, I knew I needed to hire somebody, and it was an immense relief when I did, I looked at it as, if I bring somebody on, what can I now do in flips to pay for that person? And I was doing maybe a couple of rehabs a year. And now he's been with me 6 months now, and we're doing 6 flips right now, which I never, ever, ever would have thought possible. So you don't have to look at it as, how can I make this much money and then drop my income because I hire it out? You can also look at it in a safe way. How can I leverage this person to make more money?
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know if double-edged sword is the right way to say it, but there's definitely two things to be thinking about. Because yes, for me, I was very similar to you guys, where I didn't want to hire somebody. And then someone pointed out to me that I was losing more money by not staying on top of my turnovers, by not getting to 3-day notices on time, and by not collecting on time, than I would of just paying the salary for someone to stay on top of those things for me. And on top of all that, I get that time back to grow my business more. So I think that's a fantastic perspective and approach. And I'm glad that you're right. It's all about the data, and it's all about understanding what's going on in your business so you can make those decisions.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for sharing your stories and knowledge with us. This was a very cathartic exercise, I feel like, for all of us, just to admit a lot of the mistakes that we have all made as real estate investors. So it was a lot of fun. Grace and Amelia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
If you want to learn more from Grace and Amelia, definitely make sure to check out their book, The Self-Managing Landlord. You can do that at www.biggerpockets.com/managingbook. That's biggerpockets.com/managingbook. And of course, as always, if you want to connect with them individually, we will put their contact information in the show notes below. Henry, thank you so much for joining me, man. I know you enjoyed this a lot. It seemed like you enjoyed getting some stuff off your chest over the course of this conversation.
It was like looking in a mirror. So thank you for making me realize the flaws in my business.
Hopefully that's behind both of us at this point in our careers.
Amen.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you soon for another episode of the Bigger Pockets Podcast.
The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.